is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas, Nevada, sitting here with Michael Goudeau.
It's another beautiful day.
A beautiful day. And, you know, we've had a lot of aristocrats on the Big Penn Jillette Show. Had Louis Black, Lisa Lampanelli a couple times, Harvey Mandel, Meryl Marco, David Brenner, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried a few times, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, Trey Parker, Drew Carey, Bob Saget, Phyllis Diller, The Passing Zone, and now... We have
at the end of the list,
the man who closes. You're the closer. No, you're not the actual closer. It's John Stewart. That's the final moment in the Aristocrats.
I just saw the full length DVD, like the blooper reel or whatever it is at the end.
But it's Doug Stanhope who's telling the joke with a child that we're supposed to assume is your child, but is not.
Yeah, I get a lot of emails about that.
It was a rental.
You know, all the stuff. Yeah, because I do. I think every CD I put out has some anti-baby stuff on it, so I look like a huge hypocrite to be like, is that your baby? No, it's a rental.
What is your anti-baby stuff? I have two myself.
I have a huge rant against overpopulation.
Do you think overpopulation is a problem?
Oh, yeah.
There's no evidence of that.
Well, it's a problem to me. I just don't like people. I mean,
okay, well, that's a whole different thing. I thought you were going into environmental
like global
thing.
Global warming.
No, I don't care about the environment whatsoever. That's not my problem. I didn't make the place. I just, I lived in Vegas in 86. You've been here for, there's too many people around. I don't.
Where are you from?
Massachusetts originally, but
me too. Yeah.
I've lived in the desert most of my adult life just to get away from people. I live in a town of 6,000 people.
We're talking in Arizona, so
Bisbee, Arizona. It's on the Mexican border.
And you don't like being around people at all?
I don't like crowds. I get claustrophobic. That's why I go. We just got done a month in Scotland and England, and it's just, I mean, those the towns are even without the people. Those towns are built for a donkey and a cart, and now you got two lanes of traffic and the sidewalks. You're just always rubbing shoulders with people. I'm not like a germaphobe or anything like that. It's not like people touching me. Don't touch me. Are you one of those hand cleaner guys?
No, I'm not a hand cleaner guy. I'm not one of those Howie Mandel
guys. I just don't like people around me that much. Vegas used to be great. I loved it here, but now you come here and it's depressing.
Too many people.
Too many people. Too much traffic.
But in your town of 6,000, you're happy? What, do you get a house out in the
desert? Yeah, I get a small house. I used to call it the compound till I saw this place. Now I call it the safe house.
Yeah, when there's a violent overthrow of the United States government, you're going to want to get your ass here.
Exactly.
You're going to want to get here. We have gun turrets and everything.
Oh, I'm at the Mexican border for that reason, so I can go south while they're coming north. Once FEMA starts putting people in camps for real and not just Hurricane Katrina practice runs,
you'll be running across the
all
border.
All those Mexicans left an empty place when they came here. I'll just trade out.
Now, you going to run for president? Are you running for president now?
Technically, I'm saying no just because it saves you a lot of hassles. Once you officially announce that you are, then you're open to a lot of FEC garbage that I don't want to deal with yet. So right now, I'm wink, wink, nudge, nudge, considering, but... That's basically.
You're looking into this a lot, right?
Yeah.
I think there are going to be crowds. If you win, this is going to turn ugly.
Yeah. I don't have to shake hands with all of them. I can do a lot of it on the internet. That makes me crazy that we, like, all the technology that we have that no one uses. Like, okay, we have cell phones and instant messenger. Why do I have to fly to L.A. for a meeting? Just use the email me. I'll go, I like the idea or I don't.
But they make you fly in. But if you're auditioning for something to do a show on the air, they want to get a sense of what you'll be like to work with.
Yeah, an audition, but I mean, just basic stuff where it's just some pointless. Well, it's a general meeting. VH1 just wants to see what your ideas are. Well, have them call me. I got to drive 100 miles to Tucson and fly and sit in LA traffic to do this.
You have to drive 200 miles to get to an airport?
100 miles to Tucson, yeah.
You have to drive 100 miles to get to an airport?
Right.
So
it takes the same amount of time as New York.
And you're living 100 miles from an airport?
But I tour in chunks.
Let me just phrase this question properly. What the hell kind of idiot are you? that's a proper question.
When I tour in major chunks where I was just out for two straight months and then get home for a week. I'll be out for 3 weeks and get home for a couple months. And we're going to move to Austin come 2007 for the run. I just don't have the resources there to be able to pull off a presidential run.
Now, were you watching Kinky Friedman's?
I've been out of the country a lot. They follow it very closely.
So you'll be very, so
I read a lot of articles.
You'd be very good with foreign policy because you're out of the country so much, right? You know what it's like?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I know how much we're hated and why.
Well, how much are we hated and why?
Well, in general terms, yeah, quite a bit. And I mean, I understand. Americans are really, really obnoxious on a, you know, to generalize when they go overseas. You know, busloads of fat Iowa tourists complaining about they can't get a good ham sandwich, and I'm turning into one of them. I realize when I go over there, like I'm such a creature of habit now. I can't, I barely eat, and you go over there and everything's awful. Nothing has flavor, and they don't tip, so the service is always terrible. And yeah, it gets to a point where I turn into the ugly American. Like, I just want to go home.
That's exactly my point. You know, I used to think that people overseas, you know, travelers, American travelers over in other countries, were really rude and awful. And then I went to other countries, and I really understood why. You know, there's also this feeling, you know, they would always talk about Americans being so boisterous and loud. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think there's something delightful in having all that energy. Man, when we were touring, I was touring the band called The Residents, you know,
right.
And we were touring like around Germany and stuff. And you'd go and load in, and even your road crews were like depressing and quiet.
Yeah, they are morose people.
Yeah, and I just thought, what's wrong with being fat people from Iowa screaming and yelling? I mean, that's kind of good. I mean, if you gave me a choice between being around a bunch of phony Camus people walking around brooding, yeah, smoking, you know,
yeah,
Gowaz, and
it
Iowa
depends
guys
on the situation.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does.
It depends on the situation. But you can see in a general basis, and again, like anyone else, they will, just the same way over here, you get those meathead redneck, you know, screw the French, if we had to save their ass in two worlds, like generalizing an entire country.
Well, what is it true about that?
What isn't true
about screw the French, we're going to save their ass in two worlds?
Because we didn't do squat. We were on stage hanging out and trying to get laid. We weren't garroting krauts in the trenches at Verdun.
I guess yeah. You're right. I guess you're right.
That's pretty technical. That's pretty technical.
Yeah, pretty technical. We weren't doing that. So well, if you were, and you're going to run for, you are not running now, but if you do decide to run.
When I decide to run.
I mean, how serious are you going to be?
I'm going to be very serious.
Where are you going to be between, like,
I mean, I'm not going to try to be unfunny about it. I still will be funny about it. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. No matter what I was doing, I would be funny, but it's not going to be a joke campaign.
Are you going to try for any sort of, you're going to be like a libertarian or something? Or?
Yeah. We're running libertarian.
You're running libertarian?
Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh. It's the only way it could be taken seriously whatsoever.
And what is going to be some of your... Because you're talking to me about this like
yeah,
a year
and
a half.
I'm sure I'm not the only guy. You probably get calls daily to run.
Yeah, and people were writing me in. But yeah, you were talking to me about you wanted to do this thing with tying in porno, right? Are you going to do that?
Yeah, that's something I didn't want to bring up on the air.
You didn't? Is that going to be a surprise?
Yeah, well, what we talked about, yeah.
Okay, there's nothing to do with that. Yeah. What I was talking about
but was... But that was one of the... That's why I called you and go, this, you know...
And
we got a lot of great ideas for, you know, offbeat ways to publicize the campaign.
But as opposed to just your PR ways of doing it, what are your ideas for, I mean, libertarian, I know what that means, but what's going to be the real platform stuff?
Well, obviously, drug war, but not just that. I don't know.
That's going to be the campaign slogan? Doug Stanhope.
That's why I haven't been talking about it. I want to know what I'm I'm saying.
I
don't
know.
Drug war out of Iraq, but a day, February 12th, February 27th, we will be out of Iraq. That's it.
Uh-huh. Now, what do you think about when people of other cultures want to kill us, like Muslims?
What, like terrorists?
If they want us dead, yeah. What do we do about that?
Well, don't be a target.
I think
that's the most logical.
Here,
don't be a target for terrorism.
I mean,
it's
like
a foreign policy.
Be like Japan.
Like Japan.
Like, you know, buy their oil. You know, they buy, you know, Japan is as hated as we are in terms of what they believe, you know.
Well, that's because they have lousy porn.
Yeah, exactly. But they are, you know, they are to a strict Muslim, Japan is as bad as the U.S. But we're not as bad. They don't get terrorists.
Yeah, they don't have the foreign policy.
Because they just buy the oil and shut up.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no sort of foreign policy.
They're not jealous of our freedom. Amsterdam, there's nothing blowing up in Amsterdam. There's just a lot of free mother truckers rolling around high over there.
Have you spent a lot of time in Amsterdam?
No, never. No, I've only done the UK. Europe has, and it's weird. Every time I've prejudged a place,
yeah,
I was right. I never wanted to go to Europe. Just, the UK always just screamed of bad plumbing and bleak depression, and that's exactly what it was. I have no interest in
now
Europe.
You're huge. You're huge in England, aren't you?
Compared to what I am here. At least I'm known for my comedy. I don't have the stigmas of the man show and the Girls Gone Wild hanging over me there. They just know my stand-up.
What did you do on Girls Gone Wild?
I just hosted one, but they aired the commercial in 10 minutes.
I never knew you did. I'd never even seen a Girls Gone Wild.
It was just,
See, now I'm helping the exact problem you have.
Yeah.
I'm now acerbating.
That's
right
all
here.
Right.
What did you do on the Girls?
I hosted one as a goof, but then for a year and a half.
What do you do hosting one? I mean,
you just go and make fun of dumb chicks. Yeah, it's the trout in a barrel, baby. 30 grand to just hang around and bag on dumb drunk chicks.
And you were there getting them to take their clothes off and then
throw in a few one-liners. That's what's scary about that whole, like, the guy that runs Girls Gone Wild,
yeah,
was he's in the paper with some allegations, some sexual misdeed, and getting sued or arrested. So being known as the Girls Gone Wild guy, you don't want someone to confuse me with some angry father going, I heard you're the Girls Gone Wild guy. You raped my daughter. And I go, no, that was the owner of Girls Gone Wild. I just tried to make the rape funny. Just hurling out a few just a gig.
Did you do that like a year and a half ago?
I did that like 2 years ago, but they ran the commercial for like a year and a half. It was so ubiquitous on late night cable television. And it was just like one drunk blurb where I just show me where babies feed or some stupid thing I had said that they just pull out and it turns into my inadvertent catchphrase. Where I go, oh, no, stop this now.
And you just know that CNN has that in your obituary page.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doug Stanhope found dead. Here
yeah,
he is.
Yeah, that's going to be my loop on CNN when I die.
Yeah, if you die interestingly enough.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of on the border there where you have to, you don't just die.
Exactly.
You have to die in an interesting way.
Yeah, yeah. Cancer's not going
to
cut it.
No, you have to get hit by a bus with somebody famous in it.
Exactly.
You know, that Doug Stanhope was killed that way. And they show up the package with the Girls Gone Wild and say, and oh, by the way, good enough he's dead because he's the one that raped your daughter. We'll be back after this. You go on. And also, how long were you on the man show for?
We did one season, like 22 episodes, but it sucked. It was terrible. It was with Rogan.
Yeah.
You know Rogan.
Yeah, sure.
So we have similar perspectives and a genre of comedy that was so not your own, and we want you to do what you want with it, and you think they're telling the truth. And then we would try to hammer kind of our point of view in, which is an all-or-nothing proposition with this kind of comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, a half-weight version of that was just awful. It sucked.
So what was the difference between your point of view and their point of view? I mean, I can guess.
Well, they were trying to appeal to meat-headed fraternity guys, and mm-hmm. we tried to have a point of view. Mm-hmm. And,
well, you know, we did Fear Factor with Joe Rogan, right. And I hung out with him a little bit and saw his stand-up, and he's really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
But then he starts talking about how we did the land on the moon.
Yeah, and that's one of his... It's one of his favorite conspiracy theories.
He really, really believes that.
I know. He gave me the thing that he watched, and I watched it. I go, all right.
It's horrible.
I can debunk this. But
yeah, and you can debunk it all in a second. And he's a smart guy. And you start going through point by point, and he just goes, oh, no, that's part of the conspiracy.
See, I love the 9/11 conspiracies.
What do you love about them?
Well, I there's parts of them, and again, like the thing like Loose Change that came out, again, they put so many, they tried to show every possible conspiracy that could have happened that they didn't just focus on the stuff that is unexplained. Well, explain that part to me. Don't throw out, because some of them negated others, where they go, well, this happened, and they said, but this, like those two situations, I can't give you specific examples because my memory is like a spaghetti strainer, but...
Is that going to be another one of your campaign slogans?
Yeah. I know. That's why I'm, like, I'm backing off the campaign talk, because I don't want to have to talk and double speak all the time. But until I have succinct sound bites, I really think we are prime for, you know, the Libertarian Party. Is was just all this stuff in a row, online gambling and that Ohio sex bill where you can be listed as a sex offender just for being suspected without even being charged with a crime.
It's not even suspected by the government.
Yeah.
Someone can just say,
yeah,
I think they're a sex offender, which means the only way to fight this, of course, is to go online and list everybody as a sex offender.
Exactly.
And I imagine that some not. I mean, there must be someone like us living in Ohio.
Yeah, with a phone book.
It's a lot more effective way of revenge than just sending pizzas to someone's house or sending 19 cabs over to your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
I know so many people, I don't know, that use he touched our child inappropriately, like in custody battles. I don't know how many friends or acquaintances I've met that, yeah, as soon as we get divorced, they throw, oh, he touched a kid inappropriately to get custody. It's scary.
You hang out with different people than I do. I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody that had that happen to them in a custody battle?
Not yet, no.
No, I don't know.
I've heard many stories like that.
Really?
Yeah.
From people you know?
Yeah, like, why didn't this come out when you were married? Why did this all of a sudden come up in a divorce proceeding? At least half a dozen times in my life I've known of someone.
A friend of mine said, you know, you've got to marry the woman you want to divorce. You know, and if you think about it, it's a really profound thing to say. Because if you can picture this person going through a divorce, being sane and caring about the things that matter,
yeah,
and being compassionate and not losing their head, then that's the person you want to spend your life with.
Exactly.
If you think, oh, you know, she's really hot, this is going to be great, but man, if I ever divorce her, it's going to be... I think you've picked the wrong...
But that love thing, that just twists your... I wasn't legally married. That's another thing that I don't... Because I have a whole rant against marriage. Well, no, I
love to hear it.
No, but the point is, I know it was like the baby in The Aristocrats, where I never, when I refer to my wife, we went to Tommy Rocker's down the street, and we had basically a parody of a wedding. We just mocked the whole institution of legal marriage, and we had some vagabond defrocked priest for a just made up a ceremony, and we were all high out of our minds. And that's where Extreme Elvis, he played at our wedding. You know Extreme Elvis.
Yeah, well, he's played a party here, too.
Yeah.
Have you seen Extreme Elvis recently?
He's living in my old place in Hollywood.
So I guess you
I haven't talked to him in a while.
You know, he's lost like 150 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Extreme Elvis was this great, great act.
Fantastic.
Of an incredibly fat guy with a very, very small...
Yeah, almost non-existent.
Who performed naked as Elvis and had the voice. I mean, all these Elvis impersonators, they never have the voice. And he had a fabulous voice.
And a great band. The horn section was...
While singing Perfect Elvis. It was probably the definition to me of pure avant-garde performance art. It was just great in every single way. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Doug Stanhope, who is considering running for president in the future. This is Penn Jillette and Mike Godeau. We're in Las Vegas. Right back after this. Yeah, that's the Mike Jones big band playing the Penn Jillette theme with me playing bass. I'm sitting here with Michael Godeau and Doug Stanhope, who is considering a run for president. Doug Stanhope is also one of the aristocrats. I've never seen you. I was going to say you're a fabulous stand-up, but I've heard CDs, and I've certainly seen tapes of you, but I've never seen you live.
Yeah, really, I'm not a great Vegas draw.
Where do you play when you play Vegas?
My buddy Tommy Rocker's place right down the street. It's just
Yeah, I've never been over there.
Yeah, it's a cool bar, great restaurant. He's got a stage. He plays there every weekend, and he's a friend of mine. So I come to Vegas. It's not worth trying to play a comedy club here, Harris and stuff, where they just expect Jay Leno from every comic. It's not worth the problems.
What places do you play most in the U.S. when you tour around? Where do you play?
Well, I've been playing a lot more rock clubs. I'm all over the country, but I've been trying to book more rock and roll clubs and... So you don't have the comedy club audience, the people who show up like comedy, some brand name.
Mm-hmm.
Where they do expect just some, you know, pablum, you know, where you're playing to, you know, bachelorette parties and people in balloon hats that want 20 free tickets to see. Yeah, it's just not respected as an art form. So it's nicer to just book, you know, one night in a rock and roll club where people who know me will show up. And then,
do you feel that comedy's changing? We're getting out of that kind of milk through the nose club thing.
No, I don't see anything in this country changing as far as entertainment goes. It's getting more and more dull, and it's almost like that whole corporate work ethic has slipped into the arts, where people, you know, expect that from the artist. They expect clean and sober and polished and no fun and nothing spontaneous. And
what comics do you like? Do you like other comics?
Yeah, the guys that you know, like Dave Attell is obviously one of my favorites. Mitch Hedberg was a favorite of mine. But most of the guys I really like, no one's ever heard of. They don't even get work. Like, all the edgy, weird, offbeat guys don't get booked.
Do you like Gilbert?
Love, never seen him live. That's the one guy I really want to see live.
I think Gilbert is the best of our lifetime. I really think I've seen Gilbert, you know, 10, 15 times. And Gilbert has, you know, what you're always looking for is someone who has the skill and then doesn't use it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you want. You know, what you get out of Bob Dylan. You know, whatever inspiration strikes, they're going to go with, and they'll take it anywhere. But if you said to Gilbert, here's Leno's monologue from tonight, do it. Or write Leno's monologue, he can do it all. He's just choosing not to.
I saw a guy, a friend of mine in Houston, Texas, named Rob Mungle, went up on open mic, and he's a pretty good comic. Mm-hmm. And he went up at open mic night, and he did 10 jokes, 10 topical jokes in a row, and they just all ate. And we're all even the comics are going, what is he doing? This is awful. And at the end of this dead silent set, he goes, thank you. All of these jokes were taken from Jay Leno's monologues last week. I just wanted you to see how well he'd do if he were in a live audience and didn't know who he was.
Wow.
It was fantastic. Oh, we came out of our seat.
Man.
That's a great idea. You know Eddie Gordetsky?
No,
Fat Eddie G. He's one of the writers now on 2.5 Men or one of those things, and which I haven't seen. But he won Emmys for Saturday Night Live and David Letterman. He's just really funny, cool guy. And when he was writing on Letterman, they finished up the monologue for Letterman. They got the whole monologue together, and for some reason they were a little bit ahead of schedule, which never happens on Leno. And he runs over to Show World. This is back in the 80s when Show World in New York was still, you know, transsexual, and you could talk to a live nude girl. And he runs in with Letterman's monologue, and he puts his $20 in, you know, where the screen raises.
Yeah, yeah.
He picks up the phone there. And he says, I just want to bounce Letterman's monologue off you.
So
she's going, what are you, crazy? And he goes, no, I'm one of the writers on Letterman. This is actually his monologue from tonight. Go home and see it. And she goes, Are you? What do you want me to do? Take my panties off? He goes, no, I just want you to hear the monologue. Okay?
So he sits
there with a monologue and a pencil and the phone up. And he does the whole Letterman monologue, word for word, the way it's going to be. And he makes notes, right?
Yeah.
And he then goes, thanks a lot. Door closes. He runs back to all the guys at Letterman and go, here's how a random sex worker in New York reacts to our work. He said, with not being in Dave's voice, this is what we're doing. So I think it's a very, very hip thing.
You don't hear stories like that anymore. Where is that kind of fun anymore? That's why I like people. Like Gilbert, I've heard, has a great walkout record on the road, which I look at as a sign of a good comic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think you want to have something that's a little bit polarizing. There's an interesting thing about Gilbert, though, that's psychologically, artistically so important, is I have been to a lot of Gilbert shows, and the audience is hysterical. But then afterwards, you talk to the audience members, and they all say the same thing. They all say, I was laughing my ass off, but no one else was getting it. No one else was getting it. You know, it was all over their heads. They weren't getting it. And there's this weird thing, and I think it may be an American culture thing, where if you really like something, one of the things you do is try to convince people that no one else likes it. You know, when I was working with avant-garde bands.
Or I knew it before it was popular.
Yeah, but I mean, there'd be hardcore fans that would, their first first thing they'd say is, I love you guys. You know, everybody hates you. Okay. Okay.
I get that a lot.
Yeah.
But usually they're right.
Exactly.
I have the weirdest fan base in the world, right? There'll be a 100 people at a comedy club, and 98 of them have no idea who I am. They just showed up for comedy. But two guys, like, rode a goat for 6 days across the desert, and slept out for tickets. And then you feel bad because you don't have, like, you got to hang out with them. Like, oh, they drove all the way from Canada to New York City. Like, oh, now I got to end up hanging out with them, and they're at my house for Thanksgiving, and then 2 years later, I don't even like these people. I feel bad.
They just invested too much.
Yeah.
They had the currency to buy something you didn't want to sell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
You also do a lot, you did a lot of, like, weird pranking on the web, right? You do a lot of, like, chat.
Well, yeah, I just put out the baiting book. Hey, thanks. Nice plug. I forgot that's out. I had to self-publish. We were going to do it through Disinfo, but the partners split up, and the guy that was on my side left the company, Metzger. So I self-published. Baiting is, we used to do it a lot back when I had time, because it's just so much fun. Go to baiting.org, you can see some of the stuff, or go to dougstandup.com and just buy the book. You'd set up your AIM, AOL Instant Messenger profile, saying that, you're a 13-year-old girl that likes hot, sexy chat with older men, and you bait pedophiles into some of the best.
So this is exactly what the FBI does.
Except we're just doing it to be funny.
Okay.
It's not even like perverted justice where you're sending the cops over there. We're just screwing with them. It's some of the funniest stuff I've ever written. And none of it you could repeat on this show.
No,
it is the most foul. In fact, a lot of the stuff for the aristocrats joke I took from baits that I'd written.
And so people jump right on that right away when you say you're 13 years?
Yeah, if you sit there long enough, you'll have too many boxes open to keep the conversations going at once. I mean, a lot of them you can tell it's probably, a teenager himself, but he read your profile. It said, if you're under 20, don't even bother wasting my time. You can tell a lot of times by the way they spell, you rock, R-O-K. They use a number 4 instead of the word 4. Yeah, it's probably not a 30-year-old dude.
But how many the guys that are doing that do you think know that it could be someone that's just a monkey with them? Or do they all think they're talking to a 13-year-old girl?
You can kind of tell. I mean, fairly perceptive. Like, a lot of guys, the fans of the site would, log your screen name into,
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So as soon as you came up on their friends list, they'd try to,
So people pranking people who are pranking other people.
Trying to, but they're never good. That's the
totally,
thing.
Yeah.
It's that or cops.
Yeah. It's that or cops, yeah. And it's funny because in this particular case, you're on the side of what's become Truth and Justice. So what you're doing is considered a public service, I suppose.
Well, yeah, no one's going to hey, that's wrong.
Yeah, it's really good. It's like, it's like torturing cockroaches.
What I wanted to do is do a prank phone call CD version of baiting, and I bought one of those voice synthesizers to try to make myself sound like a 13-year-old girl, because if you could get that stuff on the phone, it would be absolutely hilarious. But the thing just ended up making me sound like Stephen Hawking. It was just all really electronic, but...
But could you, you know girlfriends or something with maybe high voices
that
you feed information to.
You have to be that funny that quick.
I guess so. Yeah.
How many hot chicks are...
We're looking for a 13-year-old comic.
Yeah.
And then we get this idea of the air when it turns out we're at judge. No, see, what we were trying to do was get the voice right.
It's a gag.
Sir, Your Honor, it was the voice.
Let me read a transcript, Gotcha. What you have made this little girl say to the man on the telephone.
No, but her voice was perfect, Your Honor. Her voice was perfect. Now, Goodell, you want to get into this now?
Goodell's I want you to prolapse my... Like a what?
Goodell's got an idea for if you decide to run.
Please.
Yeah, I'm going to be your campaign manager. So you have an idea for a presidential. Yeah. You got one already?
We're working on him, but he's not a.
We can wait till the next spot.
We can wait till the next spot because if you get into this, I think that this is actually a very, very good and profound idea for someone who decides to run for president. If you're going to do it very, very seriously and really try to good information. Goodell's got a pretty good idea for it. We'll talk about that when we're right back. We've got Doug Stanhope, who may run for president. This is Ben Gillette, Mike Goodell on Free FM. Yeah, this is Ben Gillette on Big CBS Free FM. We're at penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. Mike Goodell sitting across from me, and kind of diagonal to me is Doug Stanhope. It was DougStanhope.com.
I preferred to think of at the head of the table.
At the head of the table.
The head of the table.
DougStanhope.com.
DougStanhope.com.
And you can find...
That's another... I get Stanhope08.com, but it's we have no content. Again, that's why I haven't been pushing the presidential thing. At 07, we're going to be ready to go. I just don't want it to look half-assed, which is exactly what it is right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe it'll be fully assed in a little while. Yeah. Here's Goodell's idea.
I'm telling
you, man. Pitch it to him seriously.
All right, seriously. Seriously now. What do you think your budget's going to be for running for president?
I mean, if you had to guess... These are all the things that I have no idea. Idea.
Right,
I could spout off my material that involves libertarianism, but that whole side is that right. Why I'm talking to campaign managers.
Yeah, but when it works out, it's going to be millions and millions of dollars. And as a campaign, you're going to spend a certain amount per week on advertising.
Right.
My suggestion is rather than spend that money on advertising, call a press conference and say, I am donating 1/52nd of my money, my political money for the year, to orphans in Africa, because I believe there are too many orphans in Africa, and I want to help fight orphanage. I want to help the orphanages. Do this every week until it becomes a game show atmosphere. People come and go, who's he going to give money to this week? You give money to things you believe in. You give money to things that are important to you. We learn about you because you've given money to things that matter to you.
So instead of doing the TV
ads... So it's no negative campaigning. It's all positive. It's all about what you believe and where you think your money should go.
So you think the press would buy into this every week?
I think so. I think it
might just go wild.
You know, you got a $50,000 budget for a TV ad. You know, really small because, you know, you're going to be libertarian, whatever.
Yeah.
$50,000 budget. You call a press conference and say, you know, I'm not going to pay the $50,000 for TV ads this week. I'm giving it all to cancer.
That's a great idea.
And then all the people you give
every week,
every single person goes, well, you know, the Doug Stanhope campaign just gave us this much money. They all become workers for you, right? They all become automatically. Here's a guy that thinks it's more important to give kids who are suffering money than it is to run a stupid ad. You know,
fantastic.
And you do that every week so that they're used to it. You know, you do it in every city. So instead of doing the local ads, you just go, I'll decide.
You know, I'm in Baltimore this week, and I'm giving money to this charity.
You know, Baltimore free lunch.
That's a great idea. Most of the ads that I've seen, even in 04 with the LP run, they were running these commercials. Like, what are you doing? And that's when I first thought of that idea we talked about.
You'll do your proper timing on.
Right.
You don't want to kill it here on this show.
No one's. I want to have it ready.
Sure.
Now, it's all about timing.
But you might want to consider that, or part of it, you know, some sort of amount of money. And then it seems like this nutty thing where people can donate to your campaign and know that the money's going to a good cause and just kind of going through you.
Yeah.
They're channeling their donations.
It's just a roulette wheel of...
And you become a hero.
Roulette wheel of charities.
You know, but I would say to myself, you know, I really feel like giving $50,000 to wells in Africa. So I call you up and I say, Doug, I'm going to donate $50,000 to your party. I'd like you to donate it to there, and you just come up in the middle as a middleman and say, from my campaign contributions, $50,000 goes to, and then you have this weird kind of automatic special interest groups who say to you, I'll give you $100,000 if you give it directly to the hospital.
Yeah, but can you legally do that?
I'm not sure if you can legally do that or not, but that's absolutely the thing to work out.
Why could there possibly be a law against that?
I don't know.
There may be laws against what you can do with campaign contributions.
There's so much,
You may not be able to donate it to someone else?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, you'll have to do some work on that.
Exactly. There's so much.
Man, if it works.
Trying to learn.
Are you talking to Jesse Ventura's people or Kinky's people or anything?
I've talked to a bunch of people. I have the guy I want. It's a matter of getting him able to do it, as he is not a resident of the United States.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Is my guy over in the UK. That, mm-hmm. He's the reason that, you know, I do so well over there. I've probably spent a total of, you know, 90 days of my life in the UK, and this, you know, I'm 100 times bigger than I am in 16 years in the United States, and it's all because of this guy. I trust him implicitly, and so if we can, he's working on that through a lawyer right now, so... He'll run my campaign, which would be just fantastic.
Now, what are the libertarians thinking of you?
Just what you'd expect. You know, a lot of people, he's going to make a mockery of this party. You know?
What you were just doing right then was mocking, wasn't it?
Yes, it was exactly mocking.
Just want to make it very clear that...
And there's a lot of people in the Libertarian Party I would mock, and that's what I love about the Libertarian Party, is they're freaks. They're all... That's what people have to understand. You are all part of the fringe element, no matter, you know, whether you're a right-wing, you know, homeschooler, Christian, zealot, or you're the drug angle. You're all, you know, a small percentage of everybody. You know, I'm a smoker. You know, they just passed that law in Nevada, which I thought would be the last place you couldn't smoke in bars.
Yeah, they passed the more draconian one, too. They passed the worst one.
Yeah, and they'll appeal the hell out of it because it's, you know, it's completely... The fact that casinos are left out, it's discriminatory towards small business. And
sure.
So they'll have some legal basis, but they'll find a way around it. It's just... I mean, and then because you give 80% of the people don't smoke, so you give them that, you know, choice of, hey, you want to tell 20% of the people to live like you? Most of the time they're going to go, yeah, I will. They're not thinking.
Well, the Constitution is there to protect the nuts.
Yeah. What group do I fit into that's only 20% of the people? Do you fit into some group somewhere where if you let the 80% decide to tell you how to live, you're going to get screwed?
Well, that's where that's that great expression that some libertarians use of, if you can convince the gun people that the dope people are okay, and the dope people that the gun people are okay, everyone becomes libertarian.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, again, there's a lot of stuff I'm having to learn about corporations, where a lot of the drug, hippie kind of element, the socially liberal, think that the libertarians are just going to let corporations, they're going to run more amok, where you go, if you take away, you know, how government can help corporations run amok like they have. I just don't have the sound bites. I don't have enough knowledge. I want to keep my mouth shut. I don't like talking in half sentences.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing about freedom.
I'm a stuttery on my own. when I do know what I'm trying to say, I stutter.
So you'll have a better time when you have it all clearly laid out.
Right.
They're gonna be throwing you questions, though. You aren't ready for it, you know. That's gonna happen.
I did a Q&A with Hammer of Truth, but when I can take a second to write it out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not staring at you and your big intimidating head.
I'm sorry. I wish my head were smaller. I was just
nothing makes me need a drink more than talking to a smart non-drinker like Patrick. And you're the only one I know to judge that on.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I've always been a total pro drug legalization but I still make the drug guys uncomfortable because of never having had any or even a drink. But I'm very pro-freedom. And I'm also, you know, I was one of the ones that thought that when Jim Baker was locked up, that he was locked up for all the wrong reasons, you know. He was locked up because we didn't have enough religious freedom. I really want the nut Christians to have complete freedom from the government.
Oh, exactly.
As long as I have the freedom to call them the nut Christians. You know?
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's the other thing.
And it's so easy to pull those people together if you can get them to listen. If you can get their attention. I mean, most people, even people who think they have strong leanings right or left, you talk to them for 5 minutes logically and usually go, well, yeah, that would be good in a, you know, in a perfect world, but no one else is going to vote that way. I'm not going to vote that way. Well, shut up. A lot of us are going to vote that way.
Well, you know, one of the Harry Brown, when he was running for president, said, would you be willing to give up your favorite government perk to get rid of all of the others? And that's a really interesting question because it really makes it very clear. I mean, you love NASA, but you think we're wasting money on all this other stuff. Would you give up NASA to not waste money on that other stuff?
And right.
I don't know. It's just, I still think, you know, that, well, Americans really believe in freedom if you can just remind them what freedom is.
Exactly, and not do it where you sound like it's so completely deceitful. I don't know why there's no politicians that just speak candidly or even appear to speak candidly. It's all that same rote where to the point where you just hear that tone from a politician and you just feel like I'm being lied to. Okay, this is a lie. I'm not even listening to the words.
We also use the word electable, which means a liar.
Exactly.
That's what that word means. Anybody that you say, oh, we have a chance. And that was the big problem, I believe, with Kerry, you know, because even though George Bush is wrong about virtually everything, I do believe he believes what he's saying. And the Democrats ran against him, a deep cynic who would say anything to be elected.
Right.
And everybody I talked to, you know, all my friends that are at least a little bit Democratic, would always go, well, he's saying he's for the death penalty, but he doesn't really mean it. He's just saying that to be elected. I would go, if that's not true, you're voting for someone who's for the death penalty.
Yeah.
If that is true, you're voting for a liar.
For a liar.
So tell me what's okay about that. They go, well, you can't just say what you mean. They have to do this. So everybody becomes complicit in this unplanned conspiracy, which may be a contradiction of terms. I don't know. this unplanned thing where we are only going to put liars in office. But we want it to be our liar.
Yeah, but, and you're brought up to think that that's normal and there's no changing it.
Yeah.
You're brought up, oh, nothing's sure, but you have death and taxes. And, well, why are taxes sure? Yeah. Why am I just going along with this?
And if you talk to Michael Goodell, why is death sure?
You know, that's right.
I mean, Michael Goodell thinks that we will, in our lifetime, see people born who will not die.
I think our kids are going to make it. We're not going to, but our kids. I think medical science
sounds like
advanced.
The worst type of hell. I knew this wasn't going to end.
Oh, see,
I'm only 39. I'm already bored out of my skull. That's why I'm running for president.
I've never been bored for a second.
You know? Kidding.
I'm not a bored kind of guy. I'm having a great time. I love it all. I would want to go for a lot longer. You know, my kids are a year old now, so I want to see them.
Did that really change you?
Not at all.
All right.
Not at all politically. Not at all emotionally. Although I'll tell you one thing.
But I mean,
that has seen a baby born can believe in God for a second. When you see your child born and the panic and the amount of technology that is saving the life of the two people you love most in the world, when you see how much stainless steel and money it takes to fight off the fact that God wants both those people dead,
no one
can look into the eyes of a newborn baby and say there's a God. Because I'll tell you, if we were squatting in the woods, the two people I love most would be dead. There's just no way around that. If I were in charge, no way. We need technology to fight against nature. Nature so wants us dead. Nature is trying to kill us. The natural things in this world are HIV and bears. You know, everything natural in the world wants us dead.
And we're a suicidal species on our own.
Sure.
Why do I crave Coke more than water? You let a dog run around in a yard chasing a ball for an hour and you put a bowl of Coca-Cola or water in front of him, he has a natural instinct to go to the healthy thing. I never go, ooh, geez, I would really love some leafy raw greens right now. That sounds good. That's the shut up music.
DougStanhope.com with the shut up music. You know, Doug, we could do a lot worse than you for president, and we're going to. And we are going to. I promise you that. We'll be back another time with more Free FM.
Thanks for having me.